The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit kywnewsradio.com or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to our weekly look at the stories that have been making headlines in Philadelphia and the region. My name is Matt Leon, and over the next hour, we will bring in KYW News Radio reporters to break down the stories you have been talking about. A key member of Mayor Sherrell Parker's administration is stepping down.
He is certainly a familiar face to Philadelphians.
Mike DiNardo will have all the details. An alarming story of hazing in Cheltenham has led to criminal charges.
The grand jury says they told the victim not to tell his mother.
Jim Melwert will have that story. Vic Raghupathy then stops by to tell us about the continuing impact of the signing of LeBron James with the 76ers on the city.
So many economic opportunities stem from just this one signing.
We will talk about the ongoing rise in measles cases across the country and in Pennsylvania with Dr. Brian McDonough.
The vaccine is how you treat it because you prevent it from happening in the first place, and we really had it under good control.
Mike DiNardo then returns to tell us about what activists did this week to draw attention to the need for dedicated mass transit funding in Pennsylvania.
They rode the system for 24 hours to illustrate that people ride mass transit every day.
And then we talk with Carol McKenzie about the importance of sustainable container gardening.
You can make a difference.
All that is ahead over the next hour. I hope you'll join us for The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. And we will get started right after this.
It takes a serious leader to lead the managing director's office. I want you to know that I appreciate you. Thank you for loving on Philly, and we support you 1,001% in your future efforts. Please give him a round of applause.
We start this edition of The Week in Philly with a shakeup near the top of Philadelphia city government. And for more, let's bring in KYW's Mike DiNardo. And Mike, a key member of Mayor Sherrell Parker's administration is leaving. What's the story?
Well, Matt, Adam Teal, Mayor Parker's managing director since she took office 2.5 years ago, is leaving. He is certainly a familiar face to Philadelphians. He served as the fire commissioner under Mayor Jim Kenney. At a lengthy announcement at City Hall on Tuesday, Mayor Parker thanked Adam Teal for his service.
I want to thank you, Director Teal, for all of your public service to the people of Philadelphia.
The mayor said Teal was returning to the private sector, but there was no indication as to what Teal may do next. He did not speak at the news conference.
What exactly is the role of managing director?
You could call the managing director the chief operations officer of the city. He oversees 36 different departments, including the fire department, parks and rec, and the prison system. Teal was often at the mayor's side during big emergencies, including the Northeast Philadelphia plane crash last year.
When that plane fell out of the sky on January 31st, 2025, Adam Teal was at our side. And in all the days that followed, he was the person leading and helping us deal with the cleanup, the interactions with other government partners, and the communication with neighborhood residents.
So Teal's time in this role was surrounded by some controversy, correct?
Yes. The Inquirer reported that Teal, who was a member of the Army Reserves, was frequently away on leave from his $310,000 a year managing director's job. The Inquirer said it had obtained documents showing that much of that was for military leave and general paid leave, but Teal didn't take questions about that.
And do we know, did this controversy play any role in the decision to step away?
We don't know for sure. Again, he didn't take questions at the news conference announcing his departure, so we don't know whether the controversy there had anything to do with his leaving.
So who was taking over for Teal?
It's another familiar face. It is Carlton Williams. He's held a variety of city jobs. He was the city streets commissioner and most recently headed the mayor's Office of Clean and Green Initiatives. The mayor praised Williams as someone she always had on speed dial during major events.
And Carlton Williams, I want you to know that we have a trusted, a tested, an experienced city leader who's already doing the work and excelling at it.
For his part, Williams said he was ready.
You just don't take these jobs because of the glamour. You take the jobs because you believe that you can make a change.
Matt Williams will oversee a staff of 550 people altogether.
Now, this press conference was Tuesday, but when will Williams officially take over? Do we have a concrete date?
We do not have a concrete date. It's not immediately clear when the transition will happen. The mayor said there would be what she called a warm handoff over the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Philadelphia, I want you to know we are in good hands, and this administration, the Parker administration, and our city, we will not miss a beat.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. KYW's Mike DiNardo getting us started. And he will actually be back later in the show to talk SEPTA. But we need to take a break right now, and we will have more of this edition of The Week in Philly right after this. Welcome back to The Week in Philly, and this week, criminal charges were filed against 4 former coaches and 6 players from the 2025 Cheltenham High School football team. They are all accused of taking part in one way or another in alleged violent locker room hazing. For more on this, let's bring in KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melward. And Jim, give us more of the backstory here. What happened?
Well, Matt, most of us, especially those outside of the affected community, first heard of this when Cheltenham School District suspended their football program on October 17th, then canceled the rest of the 2025 season on October 19th because of hazing, with few public details outside of what was going on in the, I guess, social media rumor mill. Montgomery County DA Kevin Steele says investigators weren't doing much better as they were blocked by adults and players as they tried to learn what happened. So he says they moved the investigation to a grand jury in December.
In order to compel testimony under oath to get the facts of the case, we use search warrants, we use investigative means to obtain cell phone records, cell phone videos, and other evidence.
There was an anonymous Childline report made on September 8th, more than 2 weeks after the alleged assault in the locker room, even though the grand jury says coaches were made aware of it pretty much immediately after. Now, the 78-page grand jury presentment, which came out this week, says investigators didn't realize this was the second assault of the 15-year-old sophomore football player until the grand jury probe began. Based on testimony and phone records, including video recovered from other football players' phones, the grand jury says the first assault was on August 15th. They say in that video, several players are seen restraining their teammate, grabbing at his clothes as they poke at his rear end through his clothing with a broomstick.
The football players can be heard laughing and yelling. At least one player is chanting broomstick him.
As for the second assault on September 3rd,
this incident was reportedly prompted by the team having to run extra conditioning drills assigned by the coaches after it was discovered that the victim took some equipment from another player's locker.
Steele says while no video was recovered from the second incident,
the juvenile victim described the incident as being punched, kicked, and stomped in the head and the groin with cleats, forcing him to curl up to protect himself and his head. The victim also said the players assaulting him were trying to poke him in the butt with the broomstick.
Steele says a teammate went and got ice for the victim for injuries to his groin, and the victim, who got a ride home with a volunteer coach, Ralph Burnley, one of the coaches who was charged. The victim told Burnley in the car what happened. The grand jury recovered text messages from Burnley's phone and also from a group of coaches.
They talked about the incident putting the football season in jeopardy and that they needed to address the incident within the team rather than outside of the team.
The grand jury says they told the victim not to tell his mother. The presentment also says she didn't learn about it until 4 days later. She had to take her son to urgent care for treatment to his genitals. It wasn't until September 18th, more than 2 weeks after, that the anonymous report was made to Childline.
So the 6 players, what are the charges they are facing here?
Well, 4 of those players are juveniles. Steele says 2 of those juveniles are accused of being active participants. They're charged again as juveniles, ranging from aggravated assault, hazing, and unlawful restraint. 2 other juveniles are charged with conspiracy to commit hazing, perjury or tampering with evidence. Now, there are two players who were 18 or close to 18, either at the time of the incidents or during the grand jury investigation. One of them, Isaiah Simpson, is charged with conspiracy to commit aggravated assault, simple assault, unlawful restraint, and other charges. Josiah Peeler is charged with false swearing for lying to law enforcement.
And the coaches, what are the charges against them?
The four coaches are charged: 55-year-old Terrence Tolbert, 42-year-old DJ McFadden, 45-year-old Benjamin Johnson III, and 60-year-old Ralph Burnley. They're charged with endangering the welfare of a child. Steele says the coaches were more concerned with the football season than the victim or the alleged actions of their players.
Instead of focusing on the problem and addressing the problem that should have been handled on that day, on September 3rd, because they knew about it, they chose a different course, and that has led to criminal charges against the coaches.
Has the school district had anything to say about this?
The superintendent issued a letter after the charges and the grand jury presentment were made public, saying the district's thoughts remain with the victim and his family, saying such violence and fear should never be experienced in a school-related setting. The statement says decisions like firing the coaching staff and canceling not only last season, but the upcoming 26-27 season were not made lightly, but they reflect, in his words, the district's commitment to protecting the safety and well-being of students while investigations unfolded.
Now, these charges were filed on Wednesday, so what's the next step here?
Well, the court cases will move through either in adult court or juvenile court, but kind of bigger picture or different picture, I guess. The grand jury also is recommending changes to state law that hazing be placed under mandatory reporting laws that cover things like child abuse or sexual assault. So that's another thing, that legislative process, to kind of keep an eye on.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim. That's KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melworth joining us. Time for another break. More of the Week in Philly is coming up. It's the Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. This is the Week in Philly, and the news broke a little more than a week ago that NBA legend LeBron James was coming to Philadelphia to join the 76ers.
I want to compete, trust in the process more than anything.
Well, safe to say that move has really unleashed some incredible energy among Sixers fans.
I was on the highway. I was about to crash when I found out.
People are hungry. They want LeBron stuff. They want some jerseys. They want some t-shirts. They want the hats.
Even a former president had an opinion.
You add a wily veteran all-timer like LeBron James, and if Joel Embiid is healthy, they could be very good.
For more on the LeBron effect in Philadelphia, let's bring in KYW's Vic Raghupathy. And Vic, there have been some big-time acquisitions by all of the pro teams in Philly over the years. Maybe some recency bias here, but I don't know if any cut through and have made the impact the LeBron James signing has.
Yeah, Matt, I think that they're is a clear difference here. It's one thing to acquire a great player. It's another thing entirely to get one of the most famous people. Like, it goes beyond just roster construction or this or that. When you get someone who truly passes, you know, the grandma test and is a ubiquitous cultural figure, it's entirely different. It's like signing the most famous person on earth.
Now, you did a story this week kind of on the economic impact that LeBron James coming to Philly could have for the city. Kind of break down what you reported on, what you were talking about here.
This was a conversation I had with John Boyd of the Boyd Company.
Signing LeBron James really puts an exclamation point on Philadelphia being a global sports powerhouse.
They own a website that does economic impact projections of various events, whether that's a Super Bowl or a Finals or the World Cup or landmark events that are going to bring a certain amount of buzz and financial gains to the area that's where it affects. And LeBron is one of those things. That's how seismic is, that it's on the level of hosting World Cup matches or something like that, or having the All-Star game or something like that.
Keep in mind, you know, every home playoff game represents tens of millions of dollars in economic impact.
According to their projections, this is a wide range, but LeBron coming to Philly over the course of this season could have an economic impact between $250 million and $430 million just from him signing in Philadelphia. And this touches across the greater Philadelphia region. And this goes for hospitality, hotels, you know, longer stays for fans and media. This goes for ticketing and the increase in prices. Already we've seen demand fly through the roof. People are dropping $300, $400 to go to preseason games. This is merchandise. People are flooding the online shops and buying all the LeBron James jerseys they can. They're going to the Mitchell and Ness and all the other outfitters and things like that. This excites people like nothing else. They want to come to Philly. They want to see the games. They want to buy the merch. Businesses are going to want to advertise with the Sixers and with LeBron. There's going to be partnerships. There's going to be new relationships opened up. So many economic opportunities stem from just this one signing.
What have you seen out in the wild from a LeBron James Sixers standpoint as far as have you seen homemade jerseys, stuff like that? I mean, obviously seen more Sixers stuff just in general.
I've seen a couple things. I've seen an adapted jersey or two, an old Lou Williams jersey, or maybe Jason Richardson. If you've got an old 23, you know, you tape over the thing. And heck, I might do that. I've got an old Michael Carter Williams jersey, and it's got the number one on it. I've been thinking about taping over it and just writing "Chosen" over. So there's stuff like that. I know I'm not a shorebird by any means, but I've seen pictures of the shops down the shore already getting the LeBron James t-shirts out. And, you know, Mitchell and Ness has only one shirt at the moment, at least as of taping, you know, in the days after the signing, they got one shirt out. I've seen around a couple places, and I've heard from people that have ordered their jerseys through the official channels that already it's sold out. And, you know, those who have ordered it, it's going to take like a month and a half or something like that for them to finally get their hands on that.
I've never seen the start of Eagles training camp push to page two.
Yeah.
Like it has
right.
been. This LeBron signing actually has pushed Eagles training camp to by the way, that's happening as well.
There are reports coming out that the Sixers are going to max out on their allotted national television time slots. I think the number was 34. Almost half of their games are potentially going to be nationally televised. It's a scary thing because this Sixers team in this era has not really held up to scrutiny very much. The lights get bright when the microscope starts to really focus in on them. That's kind of when they start to crumble. They kind of do best when expectations are at a minimum. So it's going to be a real gut check moment for this entire organization to see if they're worthy of all of the attention they're going to get from the fact that they've got LeBron James.
It's going to be fascinating to watch it. Thank you very much, Vic. That's KYW's Vic Ragyapathy joining us. We have more to get to on this edition of The Week in Philly. Don't go anywhere.
Measles is spreading in Pennsylvania. It kind of is a matter of time, probably, and we just want to prevent the disease spread before it happens.
We continue on The Week in Philly, and an alarming story this summer. Measles cases continue to rise in Pennsylvania, specifically in not too far away Lancaster County, as vaccination rates continue to decline. For more on this, let's bring in KYW medical editor Dr. Brian McDonough. And Brian, first off, across the country, we have now seen a 35-year high for measles cases. In Pennsylvania, we've seen the most cases in at least a quarter century. Give us some context. How alarmed should we be about this? The vast majority of the cases, it sounds like, in Pennsylvania are in Lancaster County and unvaccinated people, correct?
Yeah, what's happening is we're starting to see these cases sporadically and throughout the country. You know, it was in pockets, now it's moving. It's rapidly moving. The measles is spread through coughing, sneezing, droplet nuclei, and it can stay in the air for a couple hours. So you literally could be somewhere where somebody with measles was and not even know it and pick it up. And that's the fear we have.
Can you tell us what one can expect if you contract measles?
Oh, sure. And this is something, you know, a lot of us haven't seen as clinicians. Early in my career, I saw some outbreaks in cases, but most of us don't have a lot of experience. And that's an important thing to realize. Like, your doctors are learning about this too. But we do know initially, somebody has a high fever, they have a cough, they get a runny nose, watery eyes, kind of like flu-like symptoms. One of the tips is you can get these things called Koplik spots, which are like these white spots inside your mouth. But the big thing that really shows up that really changes the picture is you get a rash. It's a red rash. It starts on the face and spreads down the body. Then, of course, we know what measles looks like in many cases. and compare it against other things. And obviously, this is serious stuff. And sadly, it's something we're probably going to get more used to. We just basically didn't have to deal with it for so long.
This can be fatal, right?
That's the problem. Children with measles, a certain percentage can get not only very sick, but they can get brain damage and it can even lead to death. And they're the ones we worry about. You know, the best protection still is getting vaccinated. And usually children are vaccinated in the first year of life, like at 12 months or so. And then at 4 to 6 years, we're really seriously considering, do we have to do a third vaccine, maybe at 6 months, to protect babies? Because as it's out there more, you know, those that are going to be most vulnerable and those that could die are the babies. When a baby's born, they have natural immunity from mom, which may last up to 6 months. Assuming mom has that immunity from being vaccinated, the child's protected for a while. But then what happens is that immunity wanes. And we really weren't worried about it because, well, you weren't going to come across anybody with measles. Well, now you can. So a mom could just have their child in a stroller, walking through an area and find out when they're walking through the area with their child that somebody came by who had measles, and then the child can get measles. And that's what scares the heck out of me and keeps us up at night. So you may start to see children getting vaccinated at about 6 months of age, and then again at a year, and then at 4 to 6 years. And the irony here is the same people who don't want vaccines are now going to lead everybody to have another dose. You know, so it's going to be another shot. And sadly, right now, I mean, I'll lay it out there. You know, we're not getting support from the government. We're getting support from the Academy of Pediatrics, Academy of Family Physicians, American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. All the medical groups are aligned, but at the highest level, the people we trust it the most, you know, we're going, wait a minute, where are you getting your information?
This is a problem we do have the answer to, right, in this vaccine that the vast majority of people have taken for decades. Have there been problems associated with the vaccine?
Not really, no. I mean, there's a lot of rumors and stories about the vaccine and a lot of things on social media, you know, those kind of things. But it's a safe vaccine. We've been using it. We've tested it for years. And all of a sudden, what we're doing is we're consciously taking something away that can protect our children and protect all of us. And I think, you know, parents, I think in their heart of hearts, they want to do what's right for their child. Of course they do. And they're afraid because they've heard so many different rumors and things. And that's the problem, trying to get the real information out there.
So if someone is hearing us talk and maybe still has concerns or wants to confirm what they think, where are some places they can go to learn science-based measles information?
My recommendation, first of all, is don't look at anything that either has politics associated with it or advertising associated with it, you know, selling the product. What I believe is the best way to do it right now is do what I'm doing. I'm trusting the medical organizations.
All right. Thank you very much. That's KYW Medical Editor Dr. Brian McDonough joining us. We need to take another break. We will have more of this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio right after this. The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, proud sponsor of the KYW News Radio studios. Bring on the fun and bring home a new Honda with a great deal on your favorite Honda vehicles and finally take that road trip you've been dreaming of. Now's the time to check out the Honda Civic at HRV from Honda, the 2025 Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com best value brand.
We ride the train, we ride the bus, we say no to service cuts.
We're going to ride the train and the bus all through the night. We're going to come back here at City Hall, work together to fight for the transit we deserve.
We are back on The Week in Philly, and there is lots of stuff to talk about regarding SEPTA. And for this conversation, let's bring back KYW's Mike DiNardo. And Mike, on Tuesday, we had folks ride SEPTA for 24 hours straight. Who were they and why did they do this?
Yeah, Matt. Transit advocates, including members of Transit Forward Philadelphia and Transit Forward PA, as well as elected officials, including City Council members Mark Squilla, Rue Landau, and Cindy Bass, they all did it. They rode the system for 24 hours to illustrate that people ride mass transit every day and every night, and that the buses, trains, and trolleys fuel the city's economy and its social events.
It is 24 hours on transit, just showcasing the power and importance of public transportation.
Why now? Was there any reason specifically why this happened this week?
If there was a hook, it was because the state legislature earlier this month adopted a budget that did not include new dedicated funding for mass transit. You'll recall that was a sticking point in Harrisburg last year before the state allowed SEPTA to avoid deep service cuts by using capital money for 2 years of operating expenses. So the activists want to keep the pressure on lawmakers.
What do we want?
Transit funding!
When do we want it?
Now!
I'm curious, did these folks go like from train to train to bus to trolley? Did they stay on one train the whole time? How did it work?
There were some breaks and there were various events and meetings along the way. After an 8 a.m. rally at City Hall, they took the L to Kensington, then took the bus to Temple University. Then they went to West Philadelphia on the Broad Street line and the 52 bus. Then they went up to the Northeast and toured the Frankfurt Transportation Center. So it was a series of destinations along the way.
You can obviously understand why they want to put this front and center, because when we started this show, we went months where some sort of SEPTA financial emergency was near the top of the show, and we haven't had that. And it is easy to take for granted that these things just work without having an emergency slap you in the face. So it is important to remind people that there is not a permanent fix here. Just because we're not talking about devastating service cuts right around the corner doesn't mean things are okay.
And sometimes things don't happen until there is a crisis, but these folks want the governor and the legislature to get together and try to agree that mass transit in not only in Philadelphia, but in Pennsylvania needs dedicated mass transit funding.
Now, sticking with SEPTA this week, we got some crime figures from the transit agency, and it sounds like good news.
Yeah, we've seen a drop in serious crime on SEPTA in recent years, and that trend is continuing. Aggravated assaults down 40% in the second quarter of this year compared to the second quarter last year. Overall, serious crimes were down 21%, and this was at a time that SEPTA saw thousands of riders on the system for World Cup matches here.
Is there a why behind this? Is there like one thing that they point to why these numbers keep dropping?
There's not one thing. There has been an overall drop in crime in the city as a whole. SEPTA Police Chief Chuck Lawson says that he has a full complement of transit police now. SEPTA budgets for 214 officers. He has 220 on staff right now. And they were all out during the World Cup on foot with canines and watching live video feeds to detect any trouble. So having a full staff doing targeted enforcement really helps.
And it looks like, looking at your stories, listening to your stories, there's a lot of focus right now with SEPTA police kind of on quality of life violations.
Yeah, it's interesting. Lawson told us that his force does those special enforcement efforts based on feedback from riders. And he said the three things that riders complain about most are fare evasion, smoking, and homelessness. So there have been special enforcement blitzes. SEPTA saw a 27% increase in smoking citations and a 19% jump in fare evasion tickets compared to the second quarter of 2025. And we should say SEPTA is also upgrading its infrastructure to battle fare evasion. We've seen those nearly full-length fare gates at 10 stations so far, but Lawson says SEPTA is also piloting new turnstiles at Walnut Locust with longer gate arms that lock when you try to pull them backward to deter fare evasion.
Fare evasion is high because of a function of how easy it is. And to the extent that we can just make it just difficult enough, just inconvenient enough, either through police enforcement or infrastructure modifications, I think you'll see that drop precipitously throughout the system.
SEPTA has estimated it loses $30 to $50 million a year from people who don't pay their fares, but Matt Lawson says SEPTA has seen more than $10 million in additional fare box revenue since installing those nearly full-length fare gates on the system.
All right, thank you very much, Mike. KYW's Mike DiNardo joining us once again. Time for another break. We will have more of The Week in Philly coming up right after this. Coming coming down the stretch here on this edition of The Week in Philly. And I love to garden, and I'm lucky. Living down in South Jersey, I've got plenty of room to put in as many plants as I want, where I want. But for gardening enthusiasts in the city, space can be a real issue. And it can be a struggle to plant all the things you want, let alone do your part to try to maintain a healthy and biodiverse ecosystem. But it is possible. And for more on this, let's bring in KYW's Carol McKenzie. And Carol, you recently did a story on sustainable container gardening. Tell me more.
Right. So as you mentioned, a lot of people in the city either have a very small plot or no plot at all. You might have a slice of sidewalk or a balcony. And I was really curious, can you really make a difference? And the fact is you can. Before Philadelphia was Philadelphia, this was full of native plants that supported birds and pollinators. And as we build and we expand, we eliminate that native habitat. So it's really important that we bring that habitat back and support the food web, because the food web not only supports the animals, it supports us as well. I talked to Andrew Bunting from the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, and he says it really helps balance things out. He said, if you plant it, they will come.
If homeowners, home gardeners, apartment dwellers can, you know, do a bit of an offset through their own plantings, it helps kind of balance things out. And, you know, some of these insects and birds have shown a rebound.
How do I find out what works well? Are there resources I can go to find out the native plants and things that I can focus on?
The Pennsylvania Horticultural Society's website is great. It has a wonderful gardening blog, really informative. Homegrown National Park is a website. You can find plants native to our area there, and you can even buy them through that website. You can check out the Pennsylvania Extension website through Penn State and find out what you need. You may need to do a little legwork, but personally, I think it's worth it. I've planted natives, and even my neighbors stop by and say, oh my gosh, what is that? It's a blue bee, or these teeny, teeny, tiny bees that you don't normally see are hovering around this one plant I put in. It's fun to see the moths and the butterflies and the birds and the other insects come to your garden for these food sources. It's great.
Give me a lightning round of native plants to be on the lookout for.
I didn't bring notes for that. You want to look at different plants that bloom at different times, and there are plants that are sun plants, shade plants, things like that. So there are a lot of Pennsylvania sedges, which look like grasses. Even though a lot of them don't bloom, they're really important because insects use them as places to overwinter or nest. They use them for shelter. Sometimes birds like vines, they use the material to build their nests. Milkweed is great for butterflies. Asters are a wonderful food source. Things like blueberry bushes, a chokeberry bush, they don't get terribly big if you have a little more land. A chokeberry, you can eat the berries, but birds really depend on them for food, particularly heading into late summer. So Coreopsis is another one that is, they're beautiful plants and they're a great food source.
That sounds like something you just made up. I can speak firsthand for the blueberry bush and the importance, because I put one in this year. My neighbor was nice enough to gift me one, and I planted it, and it was doing great. And then one day I went out there and all the blueberries were gone.
Of course.
So I contributed to the cycle, but didn't get to enjoy it
myself. You are supporting the food web and supporting pollinators. My attitude is, if I get some berries to eat myself, I'll be happy. But these plants really do make a difference and really do help the birds that stick around here survive the winter.
All right. Thank you very much, Carol. That's KYW's Carol McKenzie joining us. And that is going to do it for this edition of The Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. This week's episode was produced by Brian Seltzer and Sabrina Boyd-Circa. My name is Matt Leon. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.